Warning, this podcast may contain graphic violence, sexual themes, and bad language. If our language offends you, we apologize, but we do not give a fuck. Be mindful of your kids listening.
The Evil Never Dies Podcast.
Are you looking for a new podcast that talks about, well, everything? If so, you might want to try out my new podcast, Because I Want to Know. The show where I get into people's heads and discuss how the choices in their lives have affected them. We could be talking about anything from true crime, the paranormal, or, I don't know, metal detecting. I'm going to get into the nitty-gritty of what makes people do what they do, a kind of stalking you just can't do on Facebook. So join me each Monday as I sit down and have a chat with some amazing and fascinating guests going through seemingly ordinary lives.
Begin, sir.
Okay. Sir.
You play a good game, boy. But the game is finished. Now you die. I've been waiting for you. Boy.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I'm Brett. Here with Carl. What's up, man?
Hey, how you doing tonight there, Brett?
Oh, can't complain having a bottle of wine since I ain't got to work tomorrow. So
no, I gotta work. I don't get Labor Day off anymore, I guess.
Well, tomorrow's Sunday. You got Sunday off, don't you? Oh, tomorrow is Monday, isn't it?
Yeah, you've been in a sleep all weekend and don't even know. Slept through a day, I think.
Yeah, I slept late today myself, but anyway, tonight we're talking about the movie Phantasm.
The original, not the sequel.
The original, the first one. Independent film released March 28, 1979 in California and Texas. And I think like a week later it was released everywhere else. Put out by Avco Embassy Pictures, same production company that put out John Carpenter's Halloween.
So I guess they just like bought up movies and like, and then released them.
Yep.
They didn't make them or nothing. They were just
Nope.
Sort of like Lionsgate is today. You know, Lionsgate releases a lot of movies that other people make.
Exactly. And it was written, directed, edited, about everything done by Don Coscarelli.
The great Don Coscarelli.
Yeah.
I like it. And did he do the score to that thing, or did somebody else score it? Okay, I was curious.
We'll get to that later.
I was just curious if he, because it seemed like he was sort of Carpenter, you know, did everything on Halloween, and I guess the score was.
Oh, but he was the cinematographer. He did everything.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And actually, he got the money from his dad.
I remember that, yes.
His dad's in the credits as D.A. Coscarelli. And the budget they had was $300,000. And it,
although for the 70s, that seems like a pretty good budget, really.
For an indie film, I guess.
Yeah, for an indie horror movie.
Not being backed by a big, you know.
Yeah, yeah, just for
studio.
I mean, how much, I wonder what the budget of, like, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre would have been. So
I think it was less than 300,000.
That way less. So that, yeah, that seems like it was a pretty good budget for an independent film, honestly.
Yep, yep. And it ended up grossing $22 million worldwide.
Wow.
And the soundtrack was by a guy by the name of Frederick Myro.
Never heard of him. That soundtrack's hard to come by. I've got a CD of it. It's got part of Phantasm 1 and part of Phantasm 2, but I've never been able to find the entire soundtrack to that movie. I've looked and looked, and
it's probably on YouTube. I'm sure you could get it off of YouTube or something like
that. Yeah, I'm talking about a lot of
Oh, just for collector's value.
Like an official release, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I know you can't find it on Apple Music or iTunes or Spotify. I saw once they were selling it on vinyl on the Phantasm webpage, but it showed to be sold out.
Really?
But you would have thought that would have got like a pretty good CD release, but I've not been able to find it.
I think it's one of the best horror soundtracks of all time myself.
No doubt about it. It's definitely up there with the Halloween soundtrack.
Yep. All right.
As far as classic and legend, that sound is so creepy.
Yep. It's right up there with The Exorcist and all that, you know?
Yep. Exorcist, Halloween, Phantasm.
All right. Starring in the movie was A. Michael Baldwin. He played Mike, the little 13-year-old kid in the movie that was running around with, like a chicken with his head cut off the whole fucking time. Bill Thornbury played Jody, Mike's older brother. And next is Reggie Bannister, who played, of course, Reggie.
Creative, huh?
Yeah. Well, Don Coscarelli they'd made a movie before.
Yeah, I think Mike was in it as well. I think all of them guys were in it.
Kenny and Company. It was like a funny teen
kind of teen buddy movie, something like that.
Yeah. Growing of age, or whatever the hell you want to call it. But it was pretty cool. I watched it. It was pretty decent.
I never have seen it. I look for it, but I never really had a big desire to see it. I have an update for everybody here. So the Phantasm motion picture soundtrack, which is Phantasm 1 and 2, is on eBay for $600. So somewhere in my
vinyl
CD collection. No, the CD.
The CD?
Yep, the CD.
Wow.
I found another one down here. Where did it go? They're wanting...
Is that opened or mint condition?
That just used. I found one from Taiwan that they're selling for $200, but I'm sure that's a fake.
A burnt copy or something?
Yeah, there's one from Germany for... So this soundtrack and CD is extremely rare, obviously. So somewhere here in my vast collection of CDs, I got $600, I guess, for a Phantasm soundtrack. Oh, Don Coscarelli ought to get on the ball and re-release that thing.
Yeah, he'd probably make a kill and put it out on vinyl.
I think they did do it on vinyl, but I can't find it offhand. Yeah. All right, so we were talking about Kenny and Company, and I never watched that.
Yeah, Don Coscarelli, he actually wrote that part for Reggie for Phantasm. Like the funny, still sort of badass, good friend, ice cream man guy, you know?
Yeah.
And also was Kathy Lester. She played the Lady in Lavender, who was actually the tall man, who we're going to get into that a little later too. And we got to go into that.
That's an interesting discussion.
And Angus Scrimm, the great Angus Scrimm, as the tall man. And do you know his real name?
I think it was Lawrence Guy.
Yep, Lawrence Rory Guy.
Okay, I was right. Yeah, Lawrence Guy.
He was in Don Coscarelli's first film, Jim the World's Greatest, which I have never seen.
I never even heard of that one. That's some history I did not know about.
Really, he was the director of the movie, and he was like really intimidated by Angus.
I could see why. Yeah. Angus is such a properly spoken man, was unfortunately now that he's passed away in real life.
Yeah,
very proper. I mean, he's the complete opposite of the tall man.
Yeah, Don was 19 when he made that first movie and was the youngest director to be distributed by a major studio, Universal Studios. So that's that. What else we got here? Filming took about a year. Being an independent film, most of the cast and crew and everything were friends and family members.
So they didn't have to hurry. They weren't on a schedule. They just went out and filmed when they wanted to.
Yep. But still, they said they were working 20-hour days sometimes when it got to the nitty-gritty of it, you know. And Don Coscarelli's mother actually did the makeup, most of the costumes, and some of the special effects for the movie. And The Morning Side, Mortuary.
Yes.
They were filmed at the Dunsmuir Hellman Estate up in Oakland, California. The rest of the movie was shot in Chatsworth, California, which is a suburb of Los Angeles. All right. Let's go into the spheres.
Oh, yeah. We both have one of those now.
Yep. I pre-order. That's the best pre-order that I ever got in my life, I think. I paid $99 for it. And now they want $199 for them. So I think I got a good deal. The ball, it was designed by a elderly metal worker by the name of Will Green, but he never got to see the final cut of the movie and for it to be released because he passed away like 2 months before. So that's a little bit about the balls.
The spheres.
The spheres. I was reading somewhere they called them minions too, I guess.
I never heard them called
maybe
that.
Maybe that was just for the crew and that's what they called them. You know, sometimes they have special names for stuff too. All right, next we're on to the 1971 Plymouth Barracuda. Probably one of the most badass cars in movie history. All of movie history, I think.
Definitely.
It's an awesome car.
Now, I know we're not supposed to talk about the sequels, but how many Barracudas did Don own? I do kind of wonder that.
Well, I think there was four of them.
Four total?
And then they wrecked three of them.
Boy. They shouldn't have wrecked those things.
I was watching on the special on the DVD, on the special features. There was a show called Monster Cars or something.
Oh, okay.
And they did a rebuild of the Phantasm car, but they didn't do it exact. They did it all stock and it didn't look right.
Oh, wow. I guess back then, you know, that car was popular. So they thought, well, crashing one for a movie is not a big deal, but.
Well, the Phantasm car, it had the flared out wheel wells and the bigger Kreger rims on the back and Kreger rims all the way around it, you know? And
yeah,
they had all the stock stuff put on it on the show. And Don and Mike were bitching about it saying, that ain't exactly, you know, they were like getting down to the nitty gritty of the pinstripe and stuff, you know?
Oh, wow. Yeah. They're getting a anal then on it. Yeah,
they were, but they sure like driving it though. So, all righty. And it was inspired by Ray Bradbury's
Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yep, exactly. Yep. He wanted to make that Phantasm into that, but the license was already sold for it, so he couldn't do it. So
yeah, they made a terrible version, a movie of that, I think.
Yeah,
somebody did.
I don't even know if I've even seen that, but
you don't want to. It was not very good.
Anyway, that's about all I got for my two pages of notes. You said you got some questions, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, well, let's kind of go through the movie itself is kind of what yep. I'm thinking. You know, of course, the movie starts out with what's the friend's name in the
Tommy.
Tommy, yeah. Tommy's running around the cemetery with the lady in lavender.
Yeah, they're having sexual relations on a tombstone.
Yes, they are. Then out of nowhere.
That was a nice titty shot for me when I was 13 years old when I first seen that.
And then out of nowhere, the lady in lavender turns into the tall man
yep.
and stabs him.
Yep.
So that's my first question. So what's up with the tall man turning into the lady in lavender? I mean, is he a shapeshifter by nature, or does it just only shapeshift into this one person?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think he's doing it to seduce the guy. Cause she's a good looking blonde with big titties.
Yeah.
If the tall man just come walking up to him saying, "Hey, let's go in the graveyard," I don't think that would happen.
That probably makes sense, but I don't know. It looked like the tall man could have found more victims and just lured them all to the cemetery. I don't know. That part always confused me is, and they never really made it that clear because, you know, all of a sudden it's her, then it's the tall man, then it's her again, and then it's the tall man, and then he's dead. Then it's his funeral.
Yep. And that,
Oh, by the way, this, I guess, spoiler alerts, if for some god-awful reason you haven't seen this movie, I don't know why you'd even be watching this, but if you haven't watched the movie, then you may want to turn this off at this stage. The spoilers are already given. I already gave one away. Yeah, the lady in lavender is the tall man.
Exactly.
Or is the tall man the lady in lavender? I don't know how that works out.
Could be. You never know.
So then they're having the funeral, and of course Mike is watching with binoculars as everything goes on.
Yeah.
Everybody leaves, and tall man picks up the casket and just chunks it on in the hearse just like nothing. And Mike's watching, and then in a brief second in the movie, it looks like the tall man turns around and looks at Mike, but they cut the camera before they show that. There's a flashback later in the movie where he's telling somebody, you know, he picked him up and put him in the coffin, and
they show
that same thing, but they don't show the tall man look at him. But a few minutes later, the tall man uses like some kind of a force power to knock him off of his dirt bike.
Yep, he's riding through the, wouldn't you think the funeral place would be pissed?
Some guy riding a
riding a motorcycle through the graveyard, you know, the cemetery.
But yeah. So did the tall man sense he was there first, or did he hear the dirt bike and like, oh, there's some idiot riding through the cemetery. Let's just knock him off of there. That's another question I always wondered. Like, it seemed like a weird instance.
Yeah, he just sort of put his hand up and he fell off.
Yeah. He used the force.
Well, did the tall man have anything to do with his motorcycle dying before that?
I guess so. But you would think if the tall man noticed him that when he was first watching him, he would have dealt with him right then, but he waits till he takes off on his bike and then knocks him over.
Exactly. This is
sort of puzzling.
All righty. What do you got next on the list?
Well, you know, Mike goes and sees, the fortune teller and the granddaughter, the blonde girl. And that whole sequence seemed a little.
Yeah. Why were they even involved?
I don't know. You know,
he just went there to see because she was a palm reader or whatever. Or,
I guess. And he tells about the tall man and
Wanting to know if Jody's going to leave him or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that was sort of why you go to a palm reader.
But what was up with him sticking his hand in the box? It was grabbed a hold of his hand.
What was up with the box? Yeah. What was in that box?
What's in the box?
That was another mystery. I don't think they've ever really talked about. Yeah. Was the fortune teller somehow connected to the tall man?
The world may never know.
Well, we do know that the girl would have, she went to the morning side herself.
Yeah.
Maybe she was morbidly curious. Yeah,
was she going there to visit somebody or?
I think it might have been curiosity. Maybe the grandmother sent her there. I don't know. But all you hear is her scream and then she's never seen again.
Yeah.
But you would think if the grandmother was attached to, I keep wanting to call him Angus instead of the tall man. If the grandmother was attached to him, why would she have sent her granddaughter there to get snabbed or whatever?
I'd have no clue.
You're not answering these questions, so.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, you're supposed to analyze it.
I know just as much as you do.
You're supposed to analyze it. Well, here's your one. So did Reggie and Jody actually have a band, or was just that a moment in the movie to let them sing? Because that part of the movie never made sense to me.
Well, I know Reggie actually had a band at the time.
Yeah, Reggie actually does a song for Phantasm IV, and he and his band, it's a really good song. So jumping ahead, but
I don't think the Jody guy was in that actual band, or if they had a band in the movie, or
it's just one of those moments of the movie that just kind of seems to stick out like a sore thumb. Here they are having a jam.
It was a good jam, though.
I guess it's maybe to try to show that they're buddies.
Then he does the tunes the guitar and using the tuning fork.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Which comes into play. It comes into play later, though, you know.
Was that scene just to throw in the guitar tune? That's what I wonder.
Because he don't use the tuning fork in Phantasm One, does he?
He uses it in Phantasm. Does yeah. Whenever they're later on in the movie where the
yeah okay
he
that's
uses
what I
it
thought.
And he closes the gate up. So that's the fork, maybe that's the whole part of the singing sequence is to introduce that. But that always seemed like it was sort of out of it didn't really fit the movie. But then if we explain it as that, it makes a lot of sense.
All right, well, that one's answered halfway decent.
So, around that time, it's kind of revealed that the parents died 2 years ago. So, Jody's been running around with Mike for 2 years, and now he's decided he's going to leave him with his aunt and leave town. That's where we're at that point. That's why Mike is continuously following Jody around, because he's scared he's going to leave him.
Yep, following him everywhere.
I guess he figures the kid's 13 now, so he's old enough so he can leave town and go on and do whatever the hell Jody did. Maybe be in a band. I don't know.
Maybe.
Who knows? So somewhere around there, we finally see the dwarf creatures, which brings me to this. Which came first, a dwarf or a Jabba from Star Wars? Because the Jawas and the dwarfs look exactly the same as far as their costuming.
Yeah, well, they didn't show in Phantasm One. They didn't show the faces of them. They were cloaked over.
Just like the Jawas in Star Wars, all you see is eyes. You never see the face.
You didn't even see eyes, or you know.
No, it's just a hood, but they look just like Jawas to me.
Well, Star Wars was in 76, so that's 2 years before. So
they must have been inspired by.
I'm going with the Jawas first.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've always found it funny that the Jawas come from Tatooine, which was a desert planet that was real hot and kind of and the tall man apparently is connected to a desert red world. So. Maybe yeah. Don was watching a little bit of Star Wars and got a little inspiration. You never know.
Well, when Don Coscarelli called up Angus Scrimm to do the part, he told him he was going to be an alien.
Yes.
So.
The tall man is obviously some type of an alien. He's not really, well, I don't know. I guess later in the movies, that sort of answers some of that too.
Well, so, I seen where
we'd have to jump Angus, around.
I seen where Angus said that he tried to make the character more like Death, you know?
Yeah.
So. All righty, moving on.
So, yeah, we got a lot go on. Then, of course, Jody ends up in the cemetery with a girl. But one of those Jawas show up and scares Mike. So Mike screams.
Yeah, Mike was spying on him.
But that wasn't the lady in lavender. So.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I don't think it was.
I think it was. Yeah. He picked her up at the bar.
We're going to have to check that out.
Remember, he was at
the
bar before that and he picked her up at the bar.
Was that the same person?
Yeah, it's the same one.
We'll research it.
He hears Mike scream and his head pops up and he's got her panties in his teeth.
Yeah. So
he's like, I got to go. That's my little brother. I think something's wrong.
So the tall man just hangs around bars, picking up dudes and taking them to the cemetery. That just seems sort of out of character. I mean, he's at a funeral home. Don't he get enough dead people come on through?
Are you saying he's a necrophiliac too?
Apparently.
Come on, man. Even the tall man needs some love.
Yeah, I guess he liked the men there. The tall man turned into a lady and sort of a cross dresser. So then we got a scene where, it's in town and the tall man's just randomly walking down the street in the daytime, which I don't think we've ever seen before. And Reggie opens up the ice cream truck and the cold draws the tall man's attention. It's like he kind of inhales it, or the smoke or whatever.
Yeah,
or
I know what you're saying.
It sort of paralyzes him.
He just looks over like with a weird look on his face. Like,
so that's where we're supposed to assume that he's, the cold affects him, I guess. That's the first little sub hint there that he's from a hot planet, maybe.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I see the correlation.
Then I think he also notices Mike around there, which brings me to the point. Why is he so fascinated with Mike? Of all the people, the boy.
I don't know, maybe because he's younger and more impressionable, maybe.
Well, I don't know. I mean, why? If you're the tall man, you know, you got the fortune teller's granddaughter. You've got the two younger girls at the antique place we'll get to later. But Mike is the one he just kind of latches on to and follows, you know, kind of sort of follows him in his dreams. And just what started that fascination with Mike in particular? Just storyline driven, or was there more to it?
Don't know, because you don't never really find anything more out about like that in any of the other movies either. So,
well, so that leads me to another one of the most famous scenes in the movie. I guess he was an grave digger who's got the hammer and he's going after Mike trying to beat him with it.
Yeah.
When the ball hits him in the head and
Mike
kills
drops
him
down and the ball goes over him and hits him.
Yeah. So was that the tall man trying to save his buddy Mike? Or was it just Mike dropping over and then just sheer luck the ball hits the other guy? Guy sort of looked kind of like a bad version of older version of Ozzy or something.
He's screwy looking.
Screwy looking guy.
Definitely, but, you know, definitely fit the part.
Well, you know, that was one of the scenes that they got in trouble for. Whenever he fell to the ground, you know, he was bleeding everywhere, but he also urinated himself.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing Don say that they caught a lot of slack for that part of the movie. They didn't care about the blood, but they didn't care about the fact he was...
There's piss running down his leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, that ball scene. I remember when I first seen that, I was like, wow. You'd never seen nothing like that before.
No, that was very creative.
All done on fishing lines and just throwing it down the fucking hallway, you know?
Yeah, done very well.
A lot of reverse photography in that, in them scenes.
But yeah, those spheres are probably the most iconic thing besides the tall man himself.
Exactly.
So we get a little further in the movie, of course. Mike shows up and cuts the tall man's finger off, you know, puts it in a box that's full of embalming fluid.
And didn't he shut his hand in the door or something and cut it with a knife?
Yep. He got caught up in there and puts it in his box. It's full of embalming fluid and he takes it to
and that's the first time sort of that you thought that he wasn't from this world either, because he had fucking yellow shit coming out of him.
Embalming fluid looking blood. Yeah. Yep.
Exactly.
So there's our first clue there that he's actually an alien besides, you know, all of his special powers and whatever.
Exactly.
So he takes the box to Jody and Jody finally believes, okay, I believe you now. This is for real. So.
Well, remember didn't it turn into a bug?
Well, the finger turns into a bug around that point.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's up with that? Can you explain that one, the break grit? Why does the finger turn into a large mosquito?
That's a question for everybody. Man.
If somebody can explain why that finger turned into a mosquito, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, that would be. If you know the answer to that question, send us an email at evilneverdiespod@gmail.com.
Or if you own one of these CD soundtracks, they also had some from Japan from a Laserdisc that were gold and they were selling them on the webpage. They're all sold out too. So if you got one of those CD soundtracks, you've got you a good little chunk of money there. And it was part one and part two.
The Laserdisc?
Yeah. I guess the Laserdisc came with a gold CD that had the soundtrack from part one on it.
I thought you were talking about the original Laserdisc.
I guess back when they released it on Laserdisc, it came with a gold CD of the soundtrack. That's the only place you could get the CD originally.
Really?
Then they later released the Phantasm 1 and 2 on CD, and then that was that.
They released Phantasm on Laserdisc and VHS in 81. I didn't know they had a soundtrack to go with it.
Apparently it was from the Japanese release only. Okay, so about that time they got the bug and they're trying to flush him down the trash compactor or whatever it was, and Reggie shows up.
Well, Reggie's like, let me stop you. Mike did a great job with that fucking bug in that shirt, dude, fucking hitting the walls and shit. Being a 13-year-old kid,
Mike, man, Baldwin,
he did a fucking good job, man. That was a cool scene all the way down. Then Jody gets a hold of it, and then they're both going up against the wall.
Yeah, that mosquito's a.
He's like Mike's like yells strong. Garbage disposal.
yeah. So he goes down the disposal, the compactor, whatever it was, and Reggie shows up like, "Hey man, what's up?" And they tell Reggie what's going on, and Reggie's like, "Okay, we're gonna have to take care of this." So Reggie's aboard, but around this time, it's kind of hinted or said that Reggie has a family. So where's Reggie's family at during all this? I guess they're at home just waiting for him to come back. I guess they're used to Reggie being gone, you know, in the ice cream truck all the time.
And playing in his band.
Yeah, so Reggie's not at home very much. So the family really don't play much of a role in anything.
He didn't like them. He didn't want to be there
because I think Reggie at one point has a housekeeper. There's a scene in there, so that also alludes to Reggie having, and of course Reggie's got a big nice house.
Yeah, how the fuck's he affording that on a goddamn selling fucking ice cream?
He's the only ice cream man in town.
Still back in 1979, fucking a Fucking Polar Pop was fucking only.
Well, he's also got a shop, you know, in the one scene he's parked in front of Reggie's ice cream shop loading up the truck. So I guess so during the day, Reggie sells ice cream in the shop, and then at night he goes delivers it around. So around this time, I guess let's see, the two girls from the antique store play a role in it. That's where we finally see the tall man, the picture of him from like the 1800s, where he's on the
horse-drawn hearse.
On the horse-drawn, yeah, very cool scene because
yeah, that was a cool scene. He's looking at the picture and it fucking looks at him and fucking then looks away. I guess that scene took like 20 takes to fucking get right, dude.
Wow. If you watch on the Blu-ray, the special features, they've got a scene of just the looping of that scene over and over again.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of good to put like maybe in a haunt or something, just like on a screen.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, that was trippy. It just looked at him with that snarl and looked away from him. Mike just threw it down. It was one of them old time picture things too.
Yeah. So at one point, Jody's like kind of lays back and sort of transports himself to the morgue. You remember that scene?
Yeah.
So did he really transport himself, or is he just imagining that, or what happened there?
Yeah. Where was he before that?
He was in his room or just in the house. And he sort of transports to the morgue. I always thought that scene was a little didn't make a lot of sense. Was it a
dream, maybe?
Maybe it was a dream. Because we know the tall man comes in Mike's dreams all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, the movie moves along. Then the antique girls and Mike are driving, and they find poor old Reggie has crashed now.
Yeah, how did he get from...
Yeah, who crashed Reggie's truck?
How did he get from the morgue to being crashed in the middle of the road?
I don't know.
With his ice cream truck turned over.
I guess the truck turned over and Reggie jumped out of it and ran to the morgue. I don't know. Took off by foot.
Then ran back and was laying on the...
Yeah, see, that part there is a little... That part's a little confusing too to me. Just like remember the famous part where where Jody locks Mike up in his room with a screwdriver where he can't get out. So Mike goes through all this to take the shotgun shell and punch a hole in the door. So are we to assume that Mike was in a room that had no window? I mean, wouldn't it be easier to just like get out the window?
Well, he was upstairs. I think he was in the attic is where he was.
He's in the attic. Okay. So that answers that.
I think his room was in the very top floor. So
he had a really interesting room. Yeah. Had the surface of the moon looking at the earth on there. Yeah. I guess they must have inherited all that from the parents when they passed away. Unless they're like Reggie, just independently wealthy. You know, you move a couple movies ahead, it even kind of gets into Reggie always having money. So,
yep. Don kept him well stocked with shit.
So, yeah, at that point, you know, the movie starts to make finally more sense to me that, you know, Reggie and the brothers show up there at the Morningside and they, you know, they figure out that they're shrinking these, the dead people down to dwarf size to send them to the red planet. And slaves, I think they even say in the movie, he's, you know, like, I don't know what the tall man needs all these slaves for. I mean, I don't know what kind of work he's got going on that red planet.
I don't know. It always makes me think of like some sort of mining or something, you know, like,
it never gets answered.
That's what I envision.
Well, that's where the fork finally plays a role because Reggie, boom, and it closes the portal and it also turns all the lights off.
Yeah, he did all of his own stunts in that part too.
Yes.
They had lines attached to his legs pulling him like it was sucking him in. that you can, and they had people behind throwing the barrels over.
Yeah, I think there's some features that shows that. So they all, the lights go off and everything gets crazy. So the fight goes on. I think the tall man turns back into the lady in lavender and kills Reggie off. So Reggie's dead. So they get away and come up with this great scheme and plan that they're going to, was it a mine? They're going to, the tall man, they're going to get him to fall into this big mine shaft, and then they're going to throw the rocks on him, the boulders, and trap him for good. And that's pretty much where the movie seems to end. Mike's got, you know, did his part, and Jody's standing there with his arms up in the air. The victory, they beat the tall man.
Yeah, after they, and then, after they were shooting at him with the shotgun and the hearse. Yeah.
The movie basically ends there with the tall man falls into the mine shaft and the boulders go on him and they've won. And then Mike wakes up. It was all a damn dream, the whole movie.
Until.
No, it's a dream because, you know, he wakes up and he's at Reggie's house. Once again, Reggie with his big house, but no family.
Well, at the very end, don't the tall man rip him through the mirror?
You're jumping way ahead here. Slow down. We're trying to figure out why he wakes up and he's at Reggie's house.
Oh yeah. Well,
it turns out that Jody apparently is dead and been dead.
The whole time. See, I didn't get that part for sure. That was very confusing to me.
Yeah, Jody and Mike kill the tall man, and then it's all a dream. It even shows Mike standing over Jody's grave, and I think they said Jody'd been dead for 2 weeks, 2 months. But the grave is not fresh.
So did him and Tommy get killed together, maybe, or?
I don't know.
Or Tommy then Jody, or?
And Reggie died in the dream. He didn't die in reality. Because it's just Mike and Reggie there. And Reggie's back picking on his guitar again. And that's when Mike goes upstairs. And as you said.
And they're thinking the whole time the tall man's
just
dead.
Just a dream. Reggie's playing the guitar. Mike goes upstairs because they said they're going to go on the road for a while. Which, once again, there we go. Reggie's leaving that family behind and going to take Mike on the road. So Mike goes up to get his stuff.
See, that just goes to show you he didn't give a shit about his fucking family.
Well, that really comes into play in part two, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So tall man jumps out, grabs Mike, and that's the end of the movie. Boy.
Yeah, that was, that was one of the freakiest scenes ever, man.
Well, especially due to the fact that they filmed that scene like way later because Angus had already cut his hair. And in that scene, his hair is short. I don't know how many people caught that on the, you know, first few watches.
It's hard to tell, actually, though, because of how dark it is. And he's like, tell. And he's like behind.
But he's, you like could back. Tell. I mean, it's noticeable. But I think they filmed like 5 or 6 different endings of that movie.
Yeah.
So all of these questions that I'm bringing out probably were due to the fact they filmed about like hours and hours of this movie they didn't use. So they had to piece it together like a puzzle to try to make it, you know, fit together.
Yep. They had to go pick through all the best parts.
So the puzzle didn't really fit together. So they just kind of skewed it together.
And who knows, they might've put stuff in sooner in the movie that they had maybe possibly for in a different part of the movie.
Well, that's what makes the movie so genius, the way that it goes.
Exactly.
You know, you're like, did any of this really happen? Did the tall man really grab Mike out of the thing, or was that a dream? You just kind of left hanging right there.
Well, every time I've watched it, I'm like, still to this day, it's like, what the fuck just fucking happened?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, let's now that we got to the end of the movie, when's the first time you saw Phantasm and where?
It was at a buddy of mine's house that lived in the subdivision across from me, across the fucking woods, because he was the only subdivision that had cable TV.
Exactly.
And it was on HBO.
Exactly. I was going to say, I think everybody saw that movie.
I believe it was 1980. it was probably close to a year after it was first released. I think they put it on HBO the same time. No, they put it on HBO before they released it on VHS. So,
well, I just have to say, if that movie hadn't have been put on HBO, I don't even know if we'd be discussing it today, because I think everybody that around our age range saw that thing on HBO. Because I remember watching it at my brother's house, because again, my parents didn't have cable yet. My brother did. I was little. And that was honestly one of the first real horror movies that I ever got to watch as far as modern horror movies. You know, obviously I'd seen Dracula and all the Universal movies, but I thought that was the greatest thing ever when I saw that movie as a kid.
Yeah.
It came on HBO like every other day for months. They showed it all the time, and I watched it all the time.
Yeah, my buddy was the only one that had cable out of all my friends. And he had like a sleepover or whatever, you know. We had a bunch of people over there.
And there was Fantastic.
Four or five of us guys, you know, friends and shit. And
I think most people,
his little brother and sister were there, and they watched it, and they were freaking out. And
it was definitely especially back then.
Yeah. Exactly. 1980, man. Seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. And I guess eventually it came out on Laserdisc and then VHS.
Yep. Yeah. In 81, I believe. Well, shit, I never even had a VCR.
Well, here's you some trivia.
I used to rent them at the fucking video store.
The first DVD that I bought two DVDs when I first bought my DVD player, which I paid like $1,000 for, because when I first knew DVDs existed, it was at a place called, what was that? It wasn't a movie trading company. It was a movie place in the mall that sold videotapes, VHS tapes, and they had a Blu-ray player. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to have that thing. That's like a CD that plays movies. So I got one really early. I bought two DVDs. The first one was Lord of Illusion. The second one was Phantasm. I bought them the same day in that order. I came home, I watched Phantasm on DVD, and I just could not believe how clear the picture was. I was totally sold on the DVD format at that point.
Was he even watching it on a flat screen then, or did you still have a tube TV?
Probably still had my big tube TV then. I had a real big Panasonic before I got I finally got one of those.
Weighed like 300 fucking pounds.
About 400 pounds. Because I eventually replaced that with one of those, what do you call them? What came
rear
after
projection
that?
Projection.
Rear TV. Projection. I couldn't think of the name. Yeah. I had one of those big old damn, it was a Phillips, and I hated
them. Them were 1,600 pounds.
Yeah, that thing got left at an ex-girlfriend's house. I took it over there and never got it back purposely. I think it blew up about a month later. But yeah,
no big loss then?
No. But Phantasm was it was the same day, first DVD that I ever bought. And always one of my favorite movies. Had the poster up for years. I think I finally took it down. I think it kind of got wrinkled. That was back in the days when I didn't frame posters. I just threw them on the wall.
Yeah, back when used tape. I had all my shit. Had all my shit taped.
Now, I used thumbtacks, unfortunately, so they all had the dumb thumbtack marks in them.
Well, when I was a kid, I couldn't thumbtack anything because we had plaster walls. So I had to tape all my shit and end up getting all fucked up all the time. So,
but yeah, I do remember that. I was so excited to get that on DVD format.
$1,000 for a DVD player.
I jumped into it quick.
Damn.
And the funny thing is, I remember that was one of the first, I think I replaced with a Blu-ray. Because I remember when Blu-rays first came out, I was like, I'm not buying no Blu-ray player, because they had a format war between HD, DVD, and Blu-ray. And I wasn't going to get into it. I was going to stay with DVDs. But finally bought a Blu-ray player, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to buy new releases. No, I went and bought Phantasm. So it's one of the first Blu-rays that I ever purchased. Of course, awesome. Now we got the we need to get into the fact that the current Blu-ray, they actually went back and remastered it. And J.J. Abrams had a role in that.
Yeah, the bad robot, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what all mine say when I put them in the bad robot.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams, actually, I think the story, let me think of this. He was going to show Phantasm at a college, and they're like, well, the film actually is deteriorated to the point where you can't actually show it. So he's like, no, we got to take care of that. So they went back and remastered everything on that movie. So the current Blu-ray is the remastered version. The one you was watching last night.
When I fell asleep three quarters of the way through.
Yeah, the movie put him to sleep. You've seen it so many times.
After the last titty scene, I fell asleep.
Not me. I watched it all the way through again. You know, now, however many years later, it's a great movie, but it's a little dated. It's a little hard to watch. You know, I'm a big fan of the Hammer films, and those movies have grown really, I think, kind of like a fine wine. But Phantasm, I think maybe it's because you got the sequels that come later, because I'm very attached to Phantasm 2. I honestly enjoy watching that more than Phantasm 1.
Yeah, now. I think it's my favorite too, even though it didn't have Mike in it. So
no, they replaced Mike Baldwin because Universal actually bought it up, and
yeah,
big budget, and they wanted to replace Reggie, but I think
Don
said no.
Held out on that. He's like, he ain't getting rid of the actually Reggie was the main character besides Angus.
Yeah, Reggie becomes the main character.
So,
but yeah, so that would lead to Phantasm 2, 3, 4, and then all the years later, 5. It took a generation to get all those movies out.
Well, it took almost 10 years to get part 2.
Yeah, it did.
80, when did it come out? 88?
87 or 88. That was the year of the. That was the sequels. You had Evil Dead 2, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and of course Phantasm 2. They all came out within the same time range. I don't know what came out first or what came out last. But
I just got out of the army when all them came out.
It was sort of the return of the 70s movies, and they were all done in a way different manner, of course. But I actually... Phantasm 2, Evil Dead 2, and Chainsaw 2 are three of my favorite movies because they bring a little bit more humor to the table, too. They don't take themselves so seriously.
Yep, them are other episodes.
Those are other episodes. But, you know, you can't really end Phantasm without mentioning the sequels, obviously.
Exactly.
We'll try to cover them in upcoming
episodes. In the future...
What's your favorite sequel here? Just curious, but is it 2?
Favorite sequel
of the Phantasms? Is it 2 or?
Yeah, it's going to have to be 2. 3, I wasn't a big fan of, but and 4 and Ravager, I like them okay.
See, I don't like 3 at all. They get way too comedic in it for me, and they bring in too many characters, and it just waters down the movie. Of course, Mike Baldwin does come back for the movie, but he doesn't play a big role in it. At that point, it's mainly Reggie.
Yep. All about Reggie.
Whereas part 4, Mike.
With his wife hanging back with him. I'm surprised they didn't put his wife in the movie.
Who, Gigi?
Everything she's with him.
Also monitors everything that's said, and. Oh yeah, she's not real with the fans. She's just kind of a Sharon Osbourne situation going there, I think.
Yeah. She's with him in all the like TFW and all that. She's right there with him.
Well, that's another good point.
She's
taking
that money.
A few years back, you know, the entire cast of Phantasm was at the Texas Frightmare Weekend. And Mike was there 2 years in a row. And I talked to him both times. Really good guy. I think he actually teaches film in Austin now. Got to meet Bill there, who was all he was a real humble guy.
Bill Thornberry. You know,
yeah, Bill. He doesn't really act anymore. He's just a normal guy. And I remember I had him sign the
scene for some extra cash.
Yeah, I had him
sign the poster. Did you get to meet Don Coscarelli?
Did not. The line was way too long for him and Reggie. I stayed in line and met Angus instead. I got to meet Angus Scrimm, and that was one of the greatest moments.
Shit, I waited in line for you. We waited like 2.5-3 hours, dude.
Yes, you went and met you and our friend Greg Green were both there. And
yep.
I know Greg went and got to was it Sid Haig?
Yeah, me and him went and did Sid Haig while you were waiting in line. Yeah. And when we got done,
y'all were still waiting. Yeah. Yep. But it took a while, but it was worth every bit of the wait. I remember I got interviewed by a internet radio show while waiting in line about the haunted house business. So that was quite an experience. And of course he passed away, you know, not too long afterwards.
Yep, exactly. But
Angus was such a sweet man.
Yeah, but I sat there and watched you talking to him, man. He was so soft spoken and very
very interested in what you had to say. He wasn't like some of these celebrities. We won't name them, but they were.
Take your picture and go on, you know, like.
Certain star from the Evil Dead movies. Just, hey, look, picture, go on, get out of here. Yeah, Angus actually that's what took so long in line. He talked to people.
Yep.
He wanted to hear their stories. Very special man. Very special man. Wish he would have got.
I was bummed out when after that, you know, just seeing him like that, you know. Because he seemed in pretty good shape, you know?
Yeah, his mind was great. He just, you know, he was old, you know, at that point. And his body just started to fail him. But I'd like to have seen him do some other movies of, you know, and surprised he didn't really get, you know, more roles.
He's done a lot of movies. If you pulled up his...
Yeah, they're all just nothing.
Just cameos more or less.
Yeah. You know, if I'd have been some Hollywood guy, I would have put him like as a star of make a whole another horror franchise just based around Angus Scrimm or Scream, or I don't know where he come up with that name. Did he come up with that name for Phantasm or was he using it before Phantasm?
I think he was using it before.
Definitely a
because his other name was a little bit too long, you know.
Yeah. Roy got too long.
Lawrence, Rory, whatever.
Yeah. Well,
you got anything else, brother?
No, got to meet Angus and got a picture with him.
Yeah, that's awesome. I wish I would have had the money then to do that, man. I would have waited right in line with you.
Yeah, it was a pretty expensive thing, but Reggie was being controlled. It would have been
if I would have had the 60-80 bucks, it would have been fucking worth it, man.
And I never got to Don Coscarelli, and I wish the hell I had of, but I did not.
Well, that's even before they started doing them group photos, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I know. Well, here's one last story. One year in the early days of Frightmare Weekend, Angus was there, and me and my friend David went. And he was sitting at a table, just sitting there with like some lady by him. And I'm like, well, this is cool. I just go right up to him. And I did. And I'm like, you know, hey there. And he's like, hello there. And was talking to me.
Oh, so you actually met him twice then?
No, I ain't finished. Let me finish this one. Some dude comes running up and he says, do you have, are you in line? Do you have a ticket? And I'm like, no, I don't see a line. And then some other guy runs up. He says, oh, well, it's his lunchtime. You got to have a ticket. You got to go wait in line. And they were just real dicks about it. It actually ticked me off.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. They were like, yeah, you got to have a ticket. And you got, it's not going to be until 2 o'clock or whatever. So you got to go get in line. And yeah, they were real. And it seemed like Angus was a little annoyed with them.
Really?
But yeah, they kind of whisked me out of there. And I actually didn't go back to Texas Frightmare Weekend for several years after that because it was sort of a kind of ticked me off experience.
Well, I mean, noticed, you know, I've noticed
he was just sitting at a table.
Exactly.
He was just sitting there. It's before they moved to DFW Airport where they stick them all in rooms by themselves.
Oh.
He was just sitting out in the open, you know, and like, well, hell.
Yeah, I've met a lot of movie stars and stuff there that just outside drinking beer and and smoking and stuff, you know. It's like,
did I ever tell you, this is be my last story of the night. The first year they had Texas Frightmare Weekend, it was in a small room, and I showed up, and there were just a few B-list celebrities, and there was nobody there when I got there. I was like, this is awful. There's nobody here, you know. So they've come a long way. They went from just being in a small room to the biggest convention in the Southwest. Whoever runs that operation has done a wonderful job with it. Besides the security guy that ran me away from Angus. But, you know, I understand. They had to go by their protocol.
Shout out to Lloyd Cryer, man. He's the brainchild of that operation.
Well, he has turned that thing into a mega event that is just nothing can touch. And nothing probably, even COVID, I don't think it's going to stop him.
Yeah, even Bob went there 1 year.
Bob was a celebrity there 1 year, I believe.
Yeah. Had the DeLorean out front and the skateboard and the whole fucking deal right out front the motel.
Yeah, had really all, proud
had
of
it all
them,
roped
them
off
guys.
Nice and purdy and everything.
Yeah. I'm really proud of those guys. They've come a long way from that first year. It was a small convention that year, you know, and you know, nobody'd ever tried a convention in the area of horror movies, and it sure grew into something good. Again, I won't let the security guy running away from Angus, so I won't hold a grudge because they have to follow protocol.
Exactly. Yeah, we were going to go too, but this year, but fucking sold out.
Yeah.
Which really surprises me, so.
Well, those poor guys have had to deal with COVID and lots of cancellations and having to reschedule people. And then
they've been dropping flies too in the last few months.
Well, obviously that's
they've lost
beyond
a
their
lot
control.
Of people.
Nothing they can do about that. They've done a really good job of rescheduling new people, but.
And then a few years ago, I remember they had the whole meatloaf fucking fiasco.
Oh, yeah, that was a nightmare in itself.
Yeah.
That was a frightmare right there.
Exactly. Meatloaf falling off the fucking thing.
Yeah. There's a video of that, actually. It's really pretty crazy.
It's like,
but yeah, probably won't make it.
Yeah,
there
I bet everybody
year.
Signs a waiver now.
Boy, you gotta, yeah.
We are not responsible if you fall your fat ass off the stage.
Yeah, that was a pretty tragic little incident there.
Wasn't it the interview part? He wasn't actually. He was doing an interview meet and greet thing.
I believe so.
And he's coming off.
I remember
the stage.
It turned into a big lawsuit.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, man. You got anything else?
No, that should do it for Phantasm One. We'll try to cover some of the sequels here in later episodes. Exactly. I could probably talk longer about two than I did one, honestly.
Yeah, we could do that. That's a good fucking movie, but
that's
anyway,
for a later date.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Leave us a review on iTunes. Good or bad, we don't really give a fuck.
Yeah, you got your Evil Never Dies group. You gotta
join the group.
The
you gotta answer the
host.
Questions, though. You gotta answer the questions.
I think that's bad business. You take them questions off. Let everybody join. Let everybody in and kick them out if they bad behavior.
Kick them out if they're fucking dickhead.
Yeah. Let everybody in. Get that group up to 10,000 people.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll
see how it goes first. We're newbies.
You just want people to know you're in line so they can get into the group that you close the show with.
That's one of the questions they got to answer.
I know. You make them listen all the way to the end before they even join the group.
Well,
that's why we've only got however many people. They're cutting off before they get there. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Oh, well, fuck it. Leave us a review, man.
Join the group page on Facebook.
Join the group. We need more peoples. We got like 45 in there so far.
Yeah, because they can't answer the questions.
And I got people joining me on Instagram and shit, but I never check that shit because I don't have enough time. So if you want to join there too, Instagram at Evil Not Never Dies Podcast. So, all right, everybody. Well, we're going to sign off for now, and everybody stay evil.
Hint, hint.